Three relationships, two divorces, four people, and one life sentence. This chilling case is like nothing you've heard before. A prime example of how a past can catch up with people and make them do the most insane things in the heat of the moment. Welcome to the Beyond Evil podcast, where we discuss and dissect the most mysterious, terrifying, and mind-bending cases from all over the world. Before we start, we would like to send our sincere condolences to those affected by this strange and puzzling case that leaves open as many questions as it answers. Valerie McDaniel was described as a smart and friendly person who everyone loved to be around. Throughout her education, she was at the top of her class and was a valedictorian in her graduation year of 1987. Valerie was animal crazy. She just loved them. After she graduated high school, she went to study at Texas A&M and then went on to become a veterinarian. While she was studying, she met a guy named Marion Mack McDaniel. Both were intelligent, like-minded people, and they made a good couple. So much of a good couple, in fact, they fell madly in love and got married. Valerie was from a good family who had plenty of money. The couple were set to have their dream fairy tale wedding. Valerie's parents even bought them a house to live in. She was used to the finer things in life and lived a luxurious lifestyle. Nice cars, fine wines, and big boats. But as you may have guessed from her career choice, her passion lay in animals. When she was finally a qualified veterinarian, she opened her own practice, and Mac went into business with her. He was employed as the office manager and looked after the administration side of the business so she could focus on the animals. Opening a business is very difficult, and it can put a strain on even the best of relationships. Although working together, their business took up much of their time, and they started to spend less and less quality time together because so much of their time was spent on the veterinary practice. Friends of the couple said they never showed any obvious signs of strain and always seemed happy, something which may have been true, because not long after opening their business, the couple decided they wanted children. But things didn't go as planned for them. It turned out that Valerie was unable to have children of her own, but that didn't put them off. They decided to adopt. In 2008, they adopted a daughter. You may wonder if having a child was the best idea for them to improve their relationship, especially with the strains of the business. Any parent will tell you that having a child does not really ease the strain on a relationship. If anything, although rewarding, it can make life much harder. Valerie and Marion, Mac, were no exception. After the adoption, the relationship took a turn for the worse, topped off by the fact that Valerie discovered her husband was cheating on her. How did Valerie find this out? She received a phone call from a stranger. An anonymous woman told her that she was sleeping with her husband. As if this wasn't bad enough, she also gave Valerie a list of names who she claimed were also different people he had been sleeping with behind her back. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. When confronted, Mac came clean immediately. After all, when presented with not one, but a list of names, what would have been the point of lying any further? He apologized for what he had done, and Valerie, surprisingly, gave him another chance. Her husband's apologies and promises to turn over a new leaf didn't last very long. Just a short time later, he was cheating on her again. Surely any woman listening to this will be saying to themselves, "Kick him out, get rid of him." But Valerie always wanted a family of her own. Now she had a daughter who she adored, her own business, and the last thing that she wanted was to split custody and see less of her daughter, so she decided to keep the marriage going. It seems that Valerie was under no illusions about the fact that their marriage was now pretty much just in name only. By this point, and with good reason, her relationship with Mac had all but broken down. Although still living with her husband, she came across someone new. His name, Leon Jacob. He was the son of their neighbor and had come around to Valerie's home to introduce himself. Valerie said Leon was cocky and full of himself. He was a good-looking guy, but my God, did he know it, and he used it to his advantage. He even said that he thought he looked like Bradley Cooper. Maybe he did, a bit. He had these big bright eyes, brains, and long dark wavy hair. Just my type, said Valerie. Whatever Valerie thought of Leon's attitude, she did like him. He was really good-looking. He was 8 years younger than her, and he was a doctor. What's not to like, right? Valerie didn't want to be a divorced woman, but her liking of Leon, plus the fact that her marriage had long since really been over in any meaningful sense, prompted her to file for divorce in December of 2014. She was not an old lady. She was in her 40s. She had a daughter and a lot to live for, including this new man that she liked and who liked her back. Divorces can take a while, but in 2016, Valerie was finally free of her meaningless marriage and wanted to enjoy life again. She immediately left the family home and moved into an exclusive apartment building with her daughter. The relationship with Leon continued in a casual way. She said, "I won't lie, I was enjoying the attention from a younger, good-looking guy. Things were going well, and I liked having a guy around." After a fairly brief spell of dating, Leon moved in with Valerie and her daughter. Friends of the couple remarked on how happy they seemed. Everyone seemed to like Leon, and Valerie had never looked happier. Their new relationship appeared to have given her a new lease on life. There was, however, a problem. Valerie's ex-husband, Mac. He wasn't being abusive or awkward for the sake of it, but he certainly did not like Leon, saying, "I wasn't innocent in the divorce. I know I did wrong. Valerie was always going to move on and get a new partner. My main concern was for my daughter, and I did not trust Leon one bit. He was too sure of himself. A good-looking guy? Well, sure, but God, he knew it. I just wasn't very happy with this new guy that nobody knew all that well, living under the same roof as my daughter." The question is, who is Leon, really? Leon Jacob was born in New Jersey in 1980. He moved with his family to Houston, Texas. His father died not long afterwards, and Leon had no intention of spending all of his life in the Lone Star State. He wanted adventure, something new, a common occurrence for a lot of young people. An intelligent young man, he moved far away to study medicine on the stunning, picturesque island of Grenada in the Caribbean. In 2005, he graduated from a medical school and went on to have surgical training at a series of different hospitals. But sadly for him, he never quite made the cut. More about that in just a minute. Desperate to get into the medical profession, Leon wasn't giving up. He managed to get into another residency program in Ohio, again, failing to make the grade. This was apparently because he lied about his experience regarding patient care post-surgery and lacked basic medical knowledge. His residency was terminated for the second time. He was, however, a qualified medical practitioner and moved into a different field, cardiology and transplants. Leon had also been married previously. Like Valerie, he met his wife in college. They had two sons together, but again, not too dissimilar to Valerie, their marriage turned sour, and after 12 years, his wife filed for divorce. The reason given by his ex-wife for the divorce was that she alleged that during their time together, she had experienced extreme mental cruelty. The accusations were soon validated because after they were divorced, Leon was charged with stalking her. The abuse she received was relentless, from constant phone calls, cyber abuse, threats, and name-calling. Leon, however, disagreed, responding, "I didn't stalk her. She was keeping my children from me. All I wanted was access. I'm not going to apologize for trying to see my boys. Yes, I called a lot, but just to speak to the children, not her." How much credence we can put in Leon's claims that he only wanted to speak to his children is debatable, as not long after, he moved away from them for a new medical residency, and he moved to Pittsburgh. After a short time there, he met a woman named Megan Varicus. Jacob met Megan at the hotel that she worked at. They both took a liking to each other and soon moved in together. After a time, the relationship was going well. Leon seemed to be doing well in his medical career as well and was offered a residency back in Houston, Texas. He jumped at the chance, and Megan was happy to go with him. Although Leon was doing well and making good money, he had a major flaw: his attitude. We mentioned previously about his cocksure personality, his arrogance, and this was something that was blighting his career. The residency in Houston was his seventh. He had managed to get thrown out of all of the other six, not just through a lack of knowledge, but also because he was too confident in what appeared to be his limited abilities. He wasn't willing to learn because he believed he knew everything that there was to know already. He didn't listen to tutors or mentors. He was condescending to other people in the same residency program as him, and this did not go down well with either his other junior doctors or the senior doctors and professors trying to teach him. He was even accused of putting patients in danger through a lack of knowledge, which made him a liability. Leon's attitude of seeing himself as the best just didn't come out in the workplace. Life at home was just the same. After 3 years of dating, Megan threw Leon out of their apartment. Just as the case with his marriage, things started off well, but Leon's behavior deteriorated. Megan said, at first, things were great. He seemed like a really nice guy, good-looking, great job, liked the finer things in life, things were good. But after we moved to Houston, that changed. It started with verbal abuse, but that was just the tip of the iceberg. He started physically assaulting me, hitting me repeatedly. I was constantly walking on eggshells around him. Then, one time, he grabbed me and pushed his hand over my mouth so I couldn't breathe. I didn't know if he was trying to kill me or frighten me, but it definitely scared me. That's when I said to myself, enough is enough, and I kicked him out. Again, Leon disagreed. Whatever Megan has said about me is completely untrue. She is a liar. Megan was not going to be pushed around by Leon any longer. After the breakup, she received the same treatment that his ex-wife had, phone calls and abuse. But Megan went straight to the police. In February 2017, Leon was charged with stalking and assault. This is where Leon's true personality starts to come out. Although Leon was nowhere as good a doctor as he believed himself to be, he did live for his career. After being charged by police in 2017, he was told by his lawyer that if Megan were to testify against him in a court of law, he could have his medical license taken away and he would never be allowed to practice medicine again. Leon liked to present an image to the world of this really nice guy, a caring person, a doctor who loved to help people. If he was found guilty in court, that illusion would be shattered, in his eyes, predominantly as the result of her testifying, and he wasn't going to let that happen. The lengths he was willing to go to might shock you. He decided to hire a hitman to kill Megan and subsequently stop her from testifying. He approached a man named Taz. Now, we must stress that Taz has always denied that he even contemplated taking money to kill someone, saying that he is not a violent person. We can't really say for sure if the story about Taz was genuine or not. Is he an innocent man who got caught up in Leon's scheme? Or is he actually a hitman who, for some reason, got cold feet? Taz did testify in court against Leon after he discovered that the prosecution were on to him. He described conversations with Leon in which he stated, "I am not a violent man. I would never kill anyone. Leon was the one who approached me and started suggesting different ways to kill this woman. One that sticks in my mind was to inject her with potassium straight into the heart, which would have brought on a heart attack." What Leon didn't know is that Taz was, in fact, a former soldier from the United States Army. Leon also didn't know him by the name Taz. He called him Zach, a fake name that Taz had made up for use when talking to Leon. Taz later said that when he was told about Leon's plan, he saw it as an opportunity to save a life, not take one. Leon's scheme had three phases. First, Taz was to kidnap Megan and to scare the life out of her to such an extent that she would get back with Leon. If this didn't work, he would move into phase two. This again involved scaring Megan by any means necessary to make her leave town and not attend court or just disappear forever. If Megan had still not been persuaded, then phase three was the last resort. She would have to be killed. Leon paid $9,000 to Taz to kill Megan, money which Taz said that he spent but had no intention whatsoever of killing anyone. To this day, he says he doesn't regret taking Leon's money under false pretenses and keeping it for himself. Leon now found himself in a difficult situation. He had paid Taz $9,000. Taz was completely ignoring him. Megan wasn't in any danger from this alleged hitman. His career and reputation, such as it was, were about to be taken away in court. He was getting desperate. Leon decided to hire a well-known bail bondsman named Michael Kubosh. Michael got to work with the police, trying to find out who Zach was. Of course, Zach didn't really exist. But between Michael and the police, they soon realized that Taz and Zach were one and the same. When Michael finally tracked him down, Taz explained to him that he wasn't going to kill anyone and had seen it as his duty to take the money from Leon. That way, he wouldn't give it to anyone else to try to kill Megan. The police believed Taz, but they also had no doubts that Leon was guilty and had attempted to have Megan killed, but they couldn't prove it yet. Instead of rushing into court with Taz's statement, they came up with a plan of their own. They asked Taz to work with them and catch Leon in the act, to which Taz agreed. Leon, of course, still didn't know Taz's real name. He still thought the hitman he had hired was Zach. The police got Zach to call Leon using a wiretap so that they could listen in on the whole conversation. He went on to tell Leon that he wasn't the right man for the job and that he should consider hiring someone else, someone he knew, named Javier. After his breakup with Megan, Leon had met Valerie. As we know, her marriage was over, and Leon had used his confidence and charm to move in with her, much to the displeasure of Valerie's ex-husband, Mac. During a second conversation with Taz, Leon would give away much more than anyone expected. As instructed by the police, using the wiretap, Taz spoke with Leon a second time. Leon was really on the hook. He didn't suspect any involvement from law enforcement. If you've ever seen a mafia movie, what's the first thing they always say? Never talk on the phone. It may be a signal of the level of self-confidence Leon had in himself, or maybe just plain stupidity, that he was willing to hold these very incriminating conversations over the phone. Taz told him that Javier was going to sort out his problem, no sweat. Then Leon moved the goalposts a little, saying that he wanted both problems sorted at the same time. Taz was confused and not sure what to say. He asked what the second problem was. Leon replied, stating that he also wanted Valerie's ex-husband, Mac, taken out as well. Leon confirmed that Valerie was fully on board with the plan and also wanted Mac taken out. Leon was satisfied that he had a professional working on his problems. But was Javier a professional? Yes, he most certainly was, just not in the sense that Leon thought. Javier was, in fact, a professional undercover police officer. The next day, Leon, Valerie, Taz, and Javier all met up at an Olive Garden restaurant to discuss the details. They sat down with soup and sandwiches, discussing how the hits would take place. I don't need Megan to be hurt. You can just run her out of town if you need to. But if she doesn't agree, then I don't give a f- anymore. You've got to do what you've got to do. You may have thought earlier there was no evidence that Valerie was involved, with all of this just being Leon's doing to get her ex-husband out of the way. Not a bit of it. She was fully aware and wanted Mac dead. She discussed the details of her ex-husband with Javier. They decided they would approach Mac's car, hijack it, make it look like a robbery that got out of hand, and then just shoot him in the head. Valerie was quoted as saying, "I for sure want to go through with this. I don't have any other option. That ex-husband of mine is threatening to take away my daughter, and I won't stand for it. I'm not sharing custody with him." Let's take a brief step back and take a look at this couple, Leon and Valerie. Both clearly intelligent, one a successful veterinarian with her own practice, the other a doctor. Both of them have money and comfortable lives. Neither of them, it seems, had the brains to realize how suspicious this would look to police. One hitman kills the ex-girlfriend and the ex-husband of the newly formed boyfriend and girlfriend. If the police can't find any initial leads or primary suspects, they always go to the ex-partner because in many cases, the ex is found to have some involvement. They really had no chance of getting away with this, even if their plan was successful. March the 9th of 2017, Javier visits Leon and Valerie. He presents them with various photos of Valerie's ex-husband, Mac. One shows him in his car, covered in blood. Another of him lying on the pavement, his face, again, covered in blood, exactly as they had discussed. It looked like a robbery or a carjacking having gone wrong. As far as Leon and Valerie were concerned, one of their problems had been taken care of. What Javier had shown them were pictures of Mac. He was covered in blood, but it wasn't his. He had been made aware of the contract that had been taken out on his life and agreed to help police without hesitation. They used pig's blood to make the photos look real. Mac said, "When the police came to me and told me that Valerie was planning on having me killed, I was shocked. I know I'm no saint, and things had been difficult between Valerie and me, but to the point where she would pay someone to kill me? Wow, that was not the Valerie that I knew." Leon and Valerie were happy with the photos. Both of them now awaited Megan's fate to be confirmed. They didn't have to wait long. That same night, the couple received picture messages from Javier. Pictures of Megan tied up, gagged, and with a terrified look on her face. Javier informed them that Megan was hysterical. She wouldn't listen to him, and therefore, she had been killed. Of course, we know, the police had approached Megan at the same story that they had told Mac. Realizing that her life was in danger, she too cooperated with police, but the look on her face was genuine. During the faking of the photos, Megan had suffered a genuine panic attack. Megan said, "Of course, I was happy to help the police. My life was in danger. They looked after me with sympathy and dignity. But as they tied me up and gagged me for the fake photos, the seriousness of the situation that I was really in hit home. Had the police not been so quick to act, this could have happened to me for real, and I would have been killed." The next day, March the 10th, at approximately 3 a.m., the police knocked on the door of Valerie and Leon's apartment. They informed her that her ex-husband had been the victim of a shooting and was dead. Valerie may have been a skilled veterinarian, but she wasn't an actor. When police informed her, she really didn't give off any emotions at all. She came across as cold, as if she didn't really know how to act to convince the police officers. Leon then came into the hall. The officers informed him that Mac was dead, and he was a slightly better actor, reaching over to Valerie to comfort her and looking almost genuinely shocked. His newfound acting skills didn't last very long, though, when he made a random comment to police. He said, "We've been here all day." "Oh, what was that, Leon? Nobody asked you to provide an alibi. Even if this wasn't an undercover operation, suspicions would now be firmly leveled at Leon." The police allow the couple to act for a few minutes longer. Then, certainly unexpectedly for the pair, the police inform them that they were both under arrest. Officers told the couple, who were still trying to act, badly, by the way, that both Megan and Mac were very much alive, both had been involved in taking the fake photos. As Valerie was escorted from her home, who was waiting for her at the front door of her apartment? That's right, her ex, Mac. She is forced to go into the apartment, get their daughter, and hand her over to her ex-husband. Leon still had charges pending against him relating to the original court case with Megan over the stalking and assault, so he was not allowed to make bail. However, Valerie does make bail and goes home to her apartment. Valerie may as well have been under house arrest. The press had gotten onto the story, and they were laying siege to the apartment building. She had lost her daughter, which hurt her more than anything. And with each passing news broadcast, more and more people knew what she was and what she had done. There was no escape. She was hitting rock bottom, saying, "Imagine being in your home with cameras and reporters trying just to catch a glimpse of you for a cheap story. My home was like a prison. I had nobody, not even my daughter, to comfort me. To make life worse, they even suspended my vet's license so I couldn't work. I couldn't take much more of that punishment." Valerie had used her iPad to make the video diary at the time that she was cooped up in her apartment. She is emotional and clearly in a state of spiraling depression. She did venture out once, however, meeting a group of colleagues for coffee. This would be Valerie's last goodbye, and colleagues who were there spoke later, saying that in hindsight, this was Valerie saying goodbye to them for a final time. On March 27, 2017, Valerie jumped off the balcony of her apartment building. She lived on the 7th floor and did not survive the fall. Despite what she had done, many people still wanted to see the good in her, which says a lot about the kind of person she must have been in the past, the kind, compassionate, and intelligent person that they had known. Friends and colleagues, neighbors alike, paid tribute to her. Maybe they believed that Leon was to blame for the dramatic decline in her fortunes and behavior. Valerie obviously realized that her future was looking bleak, to put it mildly. She had lost her business, her reputation was in tatters, she had little to no chance of successfully fighting the charges in court. After all, she had sat down face to face with an undercover detective, and she told him that she wanted her ex-husband dead. She was looking at a lengthy spell behind bars, maybe the rest of her life, all factors which apparently were too much for her to cope with. "It's nothing to do with me," Leon said. "She took the easy way out. I can't be held responsible for her actions. I didn't ask her to get involved. It was her idea. She got me involved, and she had to face the consequences of her own actions." On March 20th, 2018, Leon went on trial, facing two counts of solicitation of capital murder. Leon's defense used a predictable line to try to get him off of the charges. Valerie was no longer around to speak for herself, so they did their best to throw her under the bus, claiming that every stage of the plot had been concocted by her and her alone, making Leon out to be the manipulated, unwilling participant. The prosecution, however, had two key witnesses, Valerie's ex-husband Mac and Leon's ex-girlfriend Megan. The latter, of course, had already been involved in an ongoing case against Leon. When she took the stand, she described Leon as a grade A criminal, telling the court how he had done different things to her, such as grabbing her by the mouth, assaulting her, and, of course, stalking her by hiding in the bushes outside of her home and work. Leon was a control freak. He needed to feel that he was in complete control of every situation. The fact that Megan had the guts to speak out so damningly against him must have been infuriating. When he took the stand in court, he took a strange stance, to say the least. He said, "I did not ask Taz or Javier to kill anyone. I was not involved in any plot or conspiracy to murder anybody. I'm the one who is taking the blame for Valerie." Remember now, Leon had been caught on tape giving permission to Javier to kill Megan if she refused to leave town. His defense argued that the police were so desperate to perform a successful undercover operation that Javier had been ordered to lead him on. To suggest ways of killing Megan, almost making out that all of the events that preceded the trial were in fact the result of the police themselves. Leon, it was argued, was actually the victim of an overzealous police force who were out to get him. Leon eventually admitted that he did want to scare Megan, but definitely didn't want her dead. The prosecution, however, argued strongly against this. They said that when he was shown photos of Megan tied up and terrified, he did nothing to stop her from potentially being killed. He didn't ask Javier to stop or to not hurt her. He was seemingly happy for her to be taken out to save his own skin. As far as Leon knew, she had been kidnapped and was about to be killed. Lastly, the prosecution made Leon's past abundantly clear to the jury, how he had not just stalked Megan, but also his ex-wife. His controlling behavioral tendencies were indisputable. The jury deliberated for just over an hour. When they came back into the courtroom, the inevitable guilty verdict was read out. The sentencing hearing took place not too long afterwards. In an unusual but smart move at the hearing, the prosecution had Leon's ex-wife testify. She was asked about her experiences with him when she was pregnant with one of their sons. She said, "He wasn't physically violent to me at first. He used to just throw things around the room. He was verbally abusive to me. But his behavior got worse. He used to grab me, push me, and one time I remember, he grabbed him by my head and pushed it into the kitchen counter so hard it bruised my face. I don't recall what the fight was about, but I remember him threatening to punch me, and then he started kicking my legs. I was raising my legs as high as I could to try and protect my stomach and the baby. He said that if I ever left him, he would kill me, and nobody would ever find my body. He told me that as a doctor, he had access to chemicals that would simply dissolve my body. After hearing this testimony, Leon's fate was sealed. He was sentenced to life in prison for both counts of soliciting capital murder. He will not be eligible for parole until 2047 at the earliest, at which time he will be 69 years old. Megan remarked on the sentencing, "I couldn't see it at the time, but looking back, I believe Leon manipulated me. He used his looks and his seeming charms to persuade me to leave my family, my home, the life I had built in Pittsburgh. I lost everything, my career, friends, colleagues, all as the result of his controlling behavior, and I was too blind to see it at the time. But now, the girl he called poor and uneducated is responsible for him going to prison for a very long time. He will never see his children grow up, and they will be all the better for it. He will never practice medicine or live a normal life again, and I'm proud of that. I hope that while he is in jail, he thinks of me." Leon is still in prison, as we said, and will not be eligible for parole until 2047 at the earliest. Prison, however, doesn't seem to have changed him at all. Leon was quoted as saying, "Prison isn't that bad. Sometimes things happen, violence erupts. It is strange that I now live among criminals that I used to treat. I cannot accept responsibility for my crimes I was wrongly convicted of. The police set me up. Valerie was the mastermind behind the murder plots, not me. I was a doctor who helped people, not murdered them. If there is ever a movie made about these events, I hope that Bradley Cooper will be the one to play me. I look like him." Leon's ex-wife Megan and Mac now live their normal lives again, free from their past, much happier that Leon Jacob has no involvement in their lives anymore. Apparently, every woman that Leon had ever been involved with ended up worse off for it. Despite his good looks, charisma, and obvious ability to manipulate women, he was nothing more than a common criminal who specialized in domestic abuse. But what about Valerie McDaniel? Was she a victim of Leon's manipulation, or a willing participant in a plot to kill two people? Had she been brainwashed by Jacob, or was she, in fact, the one to come up with the plot in the first place, as the defense had argued? Valerie is obviously not here to defend herself, but she was caught on tape, just like Leon, saying she wanted her ex-husband dead. She tried to act shocked when the police turned up at her apartment. It was difficult to argue that she wasn't a willing participant. However, it was possible to argue that it was all very out of character for her. She wasn't a weak person. She fought for everything she had. And it is perfectly possible that, just like previous partners, Valerie may have become Leon's next victim after he got bored with her, or if she had refused to do what he said. She had a successful business. She wasn't old. She had many years of life ahead of her. So could she really have been so scared of sharing custody with Mac that she was willing to kill him so that she could have their daughter all to herself? If so, this clearly demonstrates that she also had demons in her closet that she had managed to keep hidden from the wider world. To this day, friends, families, customers, and colleagues refuse to accept that Valerie was a bad person. They believe she was under the control of Leon Jacob and that it was he who came up with the murder plot, not her. Of course, these people are biased and their testimonies must be treated as such. We will leave you to make up your own mind about Valerie, victim or criminal. The cold hard facts are that two people, Leon and Valerie, planned to hire a hitman to kill their ex-partners. Luckily for Mac and Megan, the hitman, Taz, was not willing to go along with it. He simply took Jacob's money and then subsequently helped the police to apprehend the pair. Although Taz was never implicated in the crime in any way, there are some loose ends that were never tied up. Why was Leon given Taz's number in the first place? Was he a hitman? Or someone who was in the wrong place at the wrong time? We are not implying that Taz has any involvement in criminal activity, but it is an intriguing question that was never answered. As ever, those of us here at Beyond Evil, we try our best to keep the victims at the heart of the cases we bring to you. Other than Leon's ex-wife, Megan, and Mac, there are three other victims that have not featured too prominently in this case. Leon's two sons and Valerie's daughter. They are all still lucky enough to have one parent left, but in their short lives, they have experienced upheaval that many adults can't even imagine. Valerie's daughter will always know that her mother was driven to such unhappiness that she threw herself from a seventh-floor balcony. Leon's sons will always know what their father is and what he tried to do to their mother. Had she not fought back so bravely, one of them may not have ever been born, or their mother may have ended up dead. This has been a puzzling and intriguing case to learn about. It is difficult to know who the biggest victims are. It is even difficult to know who the biggest criminal was. We can only hope that now these events are in the past, that the families can return to a normal life and live their best lives possible, free from any more pain and anguish. If you found this story compelling, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen and leave a 5-star review if you would like to show your support. Also, don't forget to hit the notification bell to stay up to date each time we reveal a new, shocking case. Until next time, stay safe and keep your eyes peeled. You never know what's lurking in the shadows.